Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everything in between, welcome back to the Kevin Clifton Show. It's a big episode, this one, because I put it out on social media not long ago when I was starting the podcast, saying what would you like me to talk about? Who do you want me to talk to? Who do you want me to interview? What's gonna interest you? And quite a lot of you came back saying we'd love to hear from your mum and dad. Obviously, for those of you who don't know, my mum and dad were Latin American champions. They've won loads and loads of dance competitions, really, really successful career. Now they have their own dance school, and obviously have brought up me and my sister Joanne to have sort of successful dance careers. And obviously now we've gone into singing and acting and both on Strictly Come Dancing. And so loads of people were saying, you really need to interview your mum and dad. So here we are. I'm in Grimsby at the moment because I've got a bit of time off right now during the weeks because of being eliminated from Strictly. Decided to come up and watch my team, Scunthorpe United. We've just got back from the game. We won 3-1. And now we're just settling into the evening in mum and dad's front room in Grimsby. And so here they are, my mum and dad, Keith and Judy Clifton.
Hiya.
Yeah.
You're silly.
It's weird saying hiya because we've been together all day.
We don't normally get an awful long time to talk to you because you're so busy. So this is really nice for us to do that.
And also, to be honest, like whenever you, I am so busy, but whenever you call me, I hate being on the phone. So you've got to catch me on the right moments. Anyone who knows me knows this.
I just wait for you to phone us now. Then I know you want to talk.
Anybody who knows me.
On the end of the phone, whether you're going to talk for about 30 seconds or you're prepared to talk for about 5 or 6 minutes, we know somehow. It's instinctive now.
Everyone who knows me knows that I would much rather just get a text from someone or a message. Like, I hate being on the phone. And unless I'm really in the mood to talk on the phone, then I'm probably just gonna go, yeah, no, yeah, fine, good, all right, bye. Yeah,
know all about that. We've talked about that for a long time.
We often say he's either watching a movie or he's just snoozing or something.
The best thing to do is to try and catch you when you're sort of going somewhere. You're on a train or on the underground or walking somewhere, and we can catch you for 5 minutes. But we soon know.
Which is weird because normally when I'm in someone's company, like when I'm face to face, if we get onto something that I'm interested in, then you won't be able to shut me up. Right?
That's right.
I'll just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until it's
You always were very, very talkative as a child.
Was I?
Yes.
Very talkative.
Yes.
All the time.
You used to watch a football match like we've just been to. We've been out teaching. Come in. And while Dad was putting the car in the garage, you'd be following him around going, yeah, and he kicked this goal and it went right up into this. Yeah, and this,
yeah,
and he's following
a whole
him.
Commentary.
And you're going, no, I saw it.
Recall.
I was there.
Of what happened in the whole football match.
And you're saying, just let me put the car in the garage. Let me get in. Let's get a cup of tea. And you were following us everywhere.
Because it's something I was interested in.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if the question is, you're right, it's like, well, it's a big question. I can't really be asked to get into it.
No. So normally what happens is when I phone up, I'll start with something that you really are interested in. You know, say like Chelsea Football Club or what the score was yesterday. Did you think they played well? Before I got to the actual question that I really want to ask you.
But now you've told me that, and now know how I'm being played, and
therefore the secret's out. Now.
Therefore, you'll start talking to me, and I'll go, just get to the question so I can answer it and get off the phone.
Yeah, great.
All right. So anyway, we're gonna have a chat now because we're in person and not on the phone. So I was just telling everyone that you had a very successful career as Latin American dancers. So what are the main sort of titles? Because I'll probably get it wrong. Four times British champions?
Four times British champions.
United Kingdom. International.
European. And you're world number one
world
at one point.
World number one at one point. Yes. Yeah. For about a year. Yeah. Just over a year.
A year at world number one. Mm. Yeah. Okay. So, really successful career. Now have a dance school that's been running for 20 years? No, more than
that. You're 37 and you came to it.
30 something years?
30 something years, yeah.
It's knocking on 35. Probably 35 years. A long time.
Yeah.
I think I had hair when we first started.
Basically, everyone in Grimsby at some point has either been to Clifton Dance Academy or knows someone who has, or has someone in the family who has been through the doors at Clifton Dance Academy.
The thing now is, of course, that women are coming into the classes, bringing their child in, and we recognise them. So I think I know you. He said, yeah, I used to come to your classes when I was three. And there's this 25, 26-year-old woman walking through the door with her child.
So old, so old.
You taught me. You showed me Agadoo or Superman, you know, when I was three. I said, wow. Thanks for that.
So, how did each of you get into it? Obviously, we've got a dancing family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, goes back generations. If we ever went on that show, who do you think you are?
Yes.
It'd probably just be generations and generations of ballroom dancers. Like, there's nothing to see here. Just everyone's a ballroom dancer.
Well, I have gone back a long way.
Yeah.
There wasn't, as far as I know, there wasn't dancers way back.
Okay.
But there were people who made pianos, if that makes any sense at all.
Is that your musician bit?
Is this musicality. A true thing?
No, this is true.
Oh, I never know whether you're starting to make a joke.
No. Absolutely true. Several of our ancestors were in the carpentry business and they actually made pianos for people. Okay. So whether this gave us some kind of musicality, I have absolutely no idea.
Maybe. There's some sort of musical gene.
Some of our past history goes back, we've traced it back to about 1700, and some people went across from Scotland, we've got Scottish ancestors, who went across to Canada and started trading in fur over in Canada. And the storyline goes that one of them married an Indian, a North American Native Indian,
A Native American,
which is really weird because my nose is nothing like a North American Indian nose.
She was called Matuski.
And we actually have a picture of her.
Yeah.
Which is quite weird. And then the guy brought her back to London and pretended that she was his housekeeper to his wife, who was already at home in London. So just a little story. But that's where we've come from.
So is it possible that there is a percentage of, like, we've got Native American blood?
Absolutely.
Woohoo!
Brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah. My uncle, my dad's brother, looked like an American Indian.
Yeah, he did.
Uncle Ron. He looked like an American Indian.
Yeah, see, I've been since you told me that the first time, I've been telling everyone I know this because, you know me, I'll hang on to anything like that. There's anything that's sort of a bit rock and roll or a bit cool or quirky or whatever. I'm like, that's me. So, like, the first time I heard that, I went out and bought, off Amazon, I bought this Native American headdress, this big black one with feathers and everything, and I've still got it. And, and like, a big sort of rock and roll ring that was, like, a skull, but with a, you know, an Indian headdress on it.
You're a nana.
Because I'm telling everyone, no, I've got Native American blood. I've got Native American blood, and everyone.
Well,
like,
this is true. Yes.
You're the most Northern English person I know. But I was like, no, I've got, and no one believes me. But it's true.
Yeah.
There's some Native American blood in there.
Yeah.
The converse to that is the fact that one of our relatives had a surname called Druitt, who lived in Whitechapel, and one of the Jack the Ripper suspects was a guy called, I believe, Edward Druitt.
Yeah, but wasn't it spelt differently?
It was spelt slightly differently, but, I mean, people in that time were not particularly good at spelling, and so the names might have got mixed up. I hope we're not related to anybody.
No, I hope we're not.
You know,
but I'm not going to bed with you tonight.
It was just interesting to find that sort of in our genealogy, that there was some kind of possible connection back there.
So potentially, as it's gone down past two generations, I could potentially be a bit of a cross between a Native American, like a guy from a Native American tribe.
Yeah, Geronimo and Jack the Ripper.
And Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
That would explain a lot. That would go a lot. That would explain my life.
That explains certain weird things about you, yes.
Can I tell them how I got into dancing? Yeah.
You can tell them.
Can I tell them?
We didn't even get to dancing yet with Dad, but go on.
Tell them all about. Well, I was put to dancing. Well, really, it was my brother.
Because I'm interested in, well, just before we get into it, is like how we started, as in like the facts of how we started, but then why is an interesting question. Why you started dancing?
Why I started dancing.
Go on, tell me the whole thing.
Well, my mum and dad were publicans. They had a pub, right? One day...
That would explain a lot as well.
One day, they found my brother, who was 8 at the time. He was 6 years older than me.
Uncle Graham.
Yeah. He was playing dominoes with some of the punters. They found him in one of the bars. And mum said, I'm not having that. I'm not having the kids growing up, you know, in this life of pub, just drinking and playing dominoes and darts and things. So she decided to take us to everything going, you know, guides and scouts and piano lessons and dancing. Yeah, piano lessons and dancing and everything. And of course, she took my brother. I was only 2 at the time. She took my brother dancing and I was just sat on her knee. And I started dancing and he didn't stay very long and here I am. And that's why I got into dancing, just so that I didn't just become someone who went to pubs, I suppose, and drank.
So they actually saved you from becoming a drunk.
Yeah. I don't even drink, so.
I know, which is really odd. Neither of us drink.
But So you started for that reason, grandma and granddad, grandma and granddad, your mum and dad, put you into it to sort of get you out of the pub.
Yeah.
Then did you enjoy it? Like, did you want to carry on doing it or did you just not know any different or like?
I'm told I absolutely loved it. I must have done.
Yeah.
I was 2. I can't remember. It's a few years ago. And I loved it as a child. Well, yeah, that was my life. It became my life. That's all I knew.
And your cousin was involved as well.
Yeah. So. I danced with my cousin, a girl, Janice. We danced together because there was no boys hardly in them days that danced, you know. And that was it. I went to Jimmy Stevenson's.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up in their...
In Grimsby.
Yeah. Ended up in their child formation team. I wasn't... He had a really great formation team that were British champions and everything. I wasn't in that one. They were a lot older. So I started off in the under-12 formation teams, and then you start competing with a formation team, and then, well, we're here for the day, let's get a partner and do the competitions. And I went into competition dancing like that.
Mm-hmm. And Dad?
Well, mine was slightly different, really, because my mum and dad... they were dancers already, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard you, Kev, telling everybody that they were quick step champions of Hemel Hempstead, which is absolutely true.
Yeah, the quick step champions of Hemel Hempstead.
That was the pinnacle of their success. I think there was 4 in it at the time.
And they won.
Bless them. They were a fairly low level.
Tell that story about...
They enjoyed it.
The pillar... Nanny and Gramps dancing, and then you can't remember it now.
I can't remember the story.
You always tell the story, or maybe they did. You used to tell the story of they did one competition, and it was like Quick Step, which was the one they knew. But then they'd entered the competition thinking it was just a Quick Step competition, but it turns out it was Quick Step and Jive. And Nan knew how to do the jive, but Grampy didn't know how to do the jive.
Right, yeah.
But there was a pillar in the middle of the floor, and all the judges were on one side.
So my dad positioned himself behind the pillar, and my mum danced off him. And so the judges couldn't see my mum.
And he was just sticking his arm out every once in a while.
and at the very end, I believe he just stepped backwards away from the pillar, turned his back on the judges so that the judges could see his number and waved at them and then walked off, which was ridiculous.
Nan was dancing by the side of the pillar and he was stood behind it because he didn't know what to do.
I didn't know anything about that.
Comparison between my dad's dancing and a pillar was quite apt, to be quite honest.
Oh, don't be horrible.
No, it was better than a pillar, but, you know. They were dancing. They were doing competitions.
My grandma and granddad, my mum and dad, never danced at all.
No, they didn't dance at all. But they were dancing down the local dance school in Hemel Hempstead, dance studio down there with a couple, really nice couple called Keith and Christine Burton, and they had a private lesson at lunchtime. And obviously, we were pretty young. I think I was about 11, 12. And they took myself and my sister down with them while they had the lesson, couldn't leave us at home. And we were sat there twiddling our thumbs while they had their lesson. And immediately after their lesson, the children's classes started. And there were loads of kids coming in, about 60, 65 kids come in. And I kept looking at it. And one thing dawned on me as Judy just said, there wasn't a lot of boys at the time. There was about 4, 5, 6 boys max and 60 girls. And the four boys seemed to be having a whale of a time because they were the centre of attention for the girls. And I was quite shy. I've always been quiet and shy through my childhood. And this seemed a very good idea to join this club, this children's dance
you
studio.
Went for the girls,
so
go on.
I was there because I wanted to try my luck with the talent that was on offer.
How
down
old?
There I was probably about 12 or 13 or something when you just start thinking about members of the opposite sex. I mean, nothing dramatic happened, but you know, it was exciting to be in that situation where they were kind of fighting to dance with you, you know.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in there to dance. There was nothing inside me saying, I really want to do this dancing thing. That didn't occur for a very long time.
Mm.
I was in there for a completely different reason. And I did do one or two competitions with one or two of the girls there, but it never occurred to me that it would be any kind of future at all.
Okay, that's interesting to me that you were. You said you were always like quiet and shy, and
apparently,
and that was a thing for you.
Because
I was shy.
Because that's the thing for me.
I was the quietest person in school.
Hmm. Because that's interesting though, isn't it? Because
yeah.
Like, obviously, I'm getting that from you then. Because like, with me, I'm like in within. People that I absolutely trust or people that I'm close to, like within family, I can talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. If, like, get me on something that I'm interested in.
Mm.
Like, if it doesn't interest me, I don't say too much. But if suddenly we're talking about something that I'm interested in, talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and I can be a bit of an on stage in front of an audience, I can be a massive extrovert and a massive show-off and a sort of showman.
Yeah.
But in any sort of social situation where it's like, here's a bunch of other people, I'm always the most quiet person in the room.
I think
like,
I've always had
I've always had a shyness about me that I don't... Mm. I'm never sort of the centre of attention unless I'm on stage or unless it's my circle of absolute closest friends that I trust completely.
Well, I've always been like that, haven't I?
You've always been the same.
You say I can yap for England on the telephone to some friends or something. You know, some friend will ring up and we're on for ages. And then Dad will say something like, oh, what did Chris have to say? And I say, oh, nothing much. Yeah. And yet we've chatted for an hour.
Yeah.
But I'm the same, you know, I close up. I mean, even, I don't know what it is really. It's like, what is it with me?
Well, you're very conscious of people around you thinking about what you're saying.
Yes.
And whether it has any value or importance.
Yeah.
And while you're thinking that, you forget what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you become slightly embarrassed about it all, and then you retract.
Yeah. So I find it easier to just sit in the corner.
Say nothing. Because then it can't be judged.
Yes.
Now, much later on in our dance career, when we started being successful, my parents could not believe the change in me from what I was at school to what I was like at a show we did as professionals, where I had the command of the people watching the show. And I didn't mind dancing in front of 10,000 people at the Budokan Hall in Japan. And I certainly didn't mind dancing in front of, you know, 150, 200 people at a local dance school somewhere where we did a show, and where I developed somehow from somewhere an ability to talk to an audience and entertain that same audience. And I don't know where that came from.
But dancing, you think?
But dancing was, shall we say, the catalyst for allowing me to explore that.
Yeah, this makes sense. Mm. This is why we do this podcast, because this is the sort of thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's totally, totally the same for me.
I can remember us going to America and we had to judge and then do a show in the evening. And I was so nervous because I was out of my comfort zone, I think, because I didn't know anyone in America. If it had been in England, because I knew all the competitors and things. But I was in America and I kept saying to Dad, you know, don't leave me, don't, you know. And yet we were out there judging on our own and I did the judging all right. But I hardly spoke to anyone. And then we went on to do the show. Can you remember?
Okay. So in Washington.
Yeah. We did our show and when we came off the floor, the other adjudicators, who I didn't really know, were like, I would never have said that you, as we've been with all day, could go out there and perform like you've just performed.
Mm.
Where did that come from?
Well, it came from the ability to know specifically what you were doing.
Yeah,
you were,
I knew
you were,
what
you were
I was
going
doing.
Through the process of doing five routines that you had worked on and perfected to the best of your ability.
Yeah, but I came out to the audience as well, didn't I? I mean, I like...
But there was a gap.
Presented myself.
You presented yourself, but there was a gap between you and the audience where you felt safe. And you were able to show yourself off. And that was brilliant. That was brilliant. Wonderful to work with. And my job as a dancer in Latin American is to show you off.
And I think it was it Jeffrey Fells?
I don't know
was there. And he said to me, you have said about four words all day. And we're talking like about 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 at night. And he said, and then you go out and do a show like that. I said, but I still didn't speak, did I? I just was performing. Yeah, I might have, as well as presenting myself well, but I was able to wink at people in the crowd, point at people in the crowd. There was a bit where I sat on somebody's knee and everything, didn't I?
It was gestures, it was mannerisms,
all that.
It was performance, but it wasn't vocal. it wasn't talking to people that you didn't know.
So
there's something about, we've gotten to this quite early, like we didn't even get to question, but this is brilliant. I knew that it would do this, we'd branch off into discussions, but like we haven't even got to question two. I'm going to abandon my questions now. But like, so there's something about performing that makes you feel safe. You said somehow you felt safe in that moment to do your thing.
Yeah.
So that's the bit that's interesting. Like, what is it about that? Like,
because
other people will be the opposite. Like, I know people who are way more confident than me in a social situation.
Mm.
Like, that just, you know, that they're so easy sort of to talk to everyone and include it and be the center of attention, like in a bar or something, but could never do what we do in terms of being a performer. Suddenly to get up on stage and suddenly be stood in front of people would freeze up completely and be like, no, I don't want to do any public speaking. I don't want to have to do anything in front of anyone. Da, 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 da. And I look at them and go, but you're the most confident person I know. Like, and I have the same thing. They look at me and go, I've had friends of mine say to me before, I don't understand what goes on in your head, because when we go and watch you like on stage or whatever, you're like this sort of showman.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come off stage and you're the most unconfident person I've ever met.
So it's true to say then that you are a product of both of us. Because in those two situations, you're either like Mum or you're like me. You're shy in certain circumstances, but on stage, you've picked up what I presumably had of being able to perform.
Mum can go out and perform. But you're never shy anymore, Dad. Like, shyness has completely gone for you.
It's not shyness. I'm not very good in small groups. I don't know why. Never have been. Maybe it's because a few people. Because we. I know this sounds ridiculous, but we didn't drink. Therefore, there was no kind of pub or club culture for us. In the pub culture, you talked, but you go down with mates and you talk endlessly about everything. We had very few friends through our life, absolute friends that we spent time with, because we were busy all the time. We were working during the day, dancing during the night. So we didn't have an awful lot of time for friends. And they were probably dancers anyway, so we didn't really get together all that much. When we went dancing, we were dancing. We were sweating. We were using our time profitably. So there was not an awful lot of small talk going on.
Mm.
So we were never in that arena where small talk was going on all the time. And I think that just carried through all our life, really.
I can do small talk with my friends, though. Quite easy.
Yeah, I can't.
I know. And Dad often says to me, I can't do small talk. It's just irrelevant.
Like, when we were at your party.
Last week, yeah.
Birthday party.
That was a fairly small group of people, some of whom I knew, some I didn't. And whereas I'm not afraid to go up to talk to somebody and say, how are you? Are you enjoying it? And then what? You know, I haven't had the experience of doing a lot of
normal talking.
Normal chit chat. Same as in Scunthorpe boardroom. I wasn't doing the talking.
Mm.
You were doing the talking.
Mm.
I allow other people to do that sort of thing. And then I will come in with
comments,
repartee, performance, a one-liner, which I'm used to, which I've had a number of years of experience doing. You know, and I'm more comfortable with that. And I'm more comfortable talking where I'm in charge of the talk.
Yeah.
So I will go to a lesson with a group of people and take the lesson, and I can talk for an hour.
And your dad's an amazing teacher. You've seen him.
Yeah.
He's entertaining while he's teaching.
Mm.
And I find a lot of enjoyment out of that, not just teaching, but trying to entertain people at the same time.
But that's, yeah, see, this is one of the things I've noticed about you, and one of the things I'll take the mick out of you for as well, like, because...
Just one of the things?
Yeah, but because it does seem like you almost, as an instinct, in any sort of social situation, feel that you have to entertain. It's like you feel the need to... I've got to do something right now to entertain everyone, to make people laugh, to be entertaining. Like you can never, I suppose, like you've just been saying, you can never just go into a situation and just chat about whatever's going on.
Because it's my fallback position.
Because he doesn't do small talk.
Because I haven't got that expertise in small talk, I have to rely on my entertainment expertise. Just drop into it.
But tonight in the boardroom, right, we've been to a football match, as he said, and it was Scunthorpe United versus Exeter. And because Kevin is so into Scunthorpe, obviously we were there for Scunthorpe. And there was two directors in the room from Exeter, and no one was speaking to them. So I walked over and said, "How long did it take you to get here?" And I thought, look at me. Why am I doing this? I was real surprised at myself that I spoke to those two men. Mind you, we beat them 3-1, and at the end I went up and said, "I'm sorry."
That is ridiculous.
I wasn't really, but I just felt sorry for them.
Now, the difference between you and me is that I spoke to them as well, but within 2-3 sentences, I'd made a joke.
Yeah.
I'd made a joke about, I've got my vest on. I've got my vest on tonight, or something.
Because it's cold. Yeah.
Because it's cold.
Yeah.
Because that's my fallback method.
Yeah.
If I make them laugh, then they will be more comfortable.
It was the same.
With me.
I remember the burn the floor rap party
restaurant.
At the restaurant.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember? You sort of came in. You just finished something. You came in a bit later. We're all having a meal. All the cast of Burn the Floor and directors and and whatever. And then you came in and we were all just sort of chatting about, I don't know, whatever we were chatting about, the show, how it's gone, the tour, what you're doing next. And then I noticed for 2 minutes, you were sort of quiet and sort of...
Only two?
I could see it in your eyes that you sort of almost didn't feel part of what was going on.
Mm.
You weren't part of the group, the gang.
Mm.
You weren't in the moment with everyone else.
Mm.
You just sort of sat on the side quiet. And then I remember seeing you turn around to Mum and say, "Right, should we get them doing that thing? Like you've got that party, so it's like a party game
party
thing
game.
Where you bang the table and then try and touch your nose like that thing. And it's like a funny little game. Right, should we get everyone doing that?" And I remember saying to you at the time, "No, you don't have to be the party host. You don't have you don't have to entertain everybody. Just be here and..."
But
we're
not good at parties unless
organising. This is why. We can organise a party.
Mm.
We can organise it and we have a great time. But if we go to a party, we sit quiet in a corner and really we're picking fault, really, which is awful. But we're saying, if this was our party, we'd be doing this. And if this was our party, we'd be doing that. Isn't that awful?
Which is slightly competitive and unnecessary, but it's what we know and we understand. It's quite narrow.
Okay, so
really.
So what you understand is performance and competition.
Yes.
Right? So that, because that's the life that you've
been
brought up in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because if we rewind.
Mm.
Now you're getting a bit older, you're getting a bit better at the dancing. You've decided to keep doing it. You must be enjoying it. You're going to keep doing it. You feel like you're getting some... Dad, you feel like you're getting some confidence out of it. Mum, you're... I'm guessing you're probably finding that you're quite good at it and enjoying it and
Well, your mum got good very, very quickly. What were you? Juvenile quick step champion or something? Or
yeah, junior.
Your mum was very good fairly quickly, and she was top 12 in the country and all that kind of thing before we even saw each other.
But that was in ballroom.
And at that point, when you were seriously good, I was dancing with somebody else down south, and I still wasn't.
You were seriously
really
bad.
That interested. I wasn't that interested, to be honest. Certainly, I wasn't particularly competitive. You know, so
why are we still doing
it?
Just because you were finding confidence in it. You're finding your identity.
I was finding an outlet where I had exactly an identity for myself, which hadn't been there beforehand.
Plus, your mum and dad did it. Plus, your sister did it.
My sister did it as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it was
a champion.
Yeah.
It was running through the family.
They were all going to competitions
every
week.
It was just following a path that was available to me.
Being part of the group. Community.
Being part of the group and being accepted. Mm. Because at school I wasn't really part of any group.
Mm.
I had one friend that I could say, you know, I spoke to
Bless
more than the others.
Socks.
But you know, at school there are certain small tight groups that you have.
Mary Kneebone.
And I wasn't one of them. I wasn't in any of those groups.
Yeah,
but I was finding a positivity out of being in dance for some reason. And of course, when it came to the end of year dance at the grammar school at Emil Hempstead, the gym teacher said, the lady said, right, we'll have this dance, you know, and you're going to dance together. And she taught some steps. And the boys sat down one side of this huge hall and the girls sat down the other side of the huge hall. And she said, the way to do this is for the boys to walk across and ask the girls to dance. This is what you do. This is the way you do it. You've got to have manners. And because I'd been dancing, I was the only one who had the confidence to get straight up and walk across the floor in front of everybody and ask the best looking girl over there if I could dance with her.
Mm.
And then the other boys were thinking, oh, heck, you know, why were we taking the mick out of him, really? Because he's just taken out the equation that the best-looking girl over there.
And were you conscious of that at the time? Like, were you feeling confident in that moment?
I was feeling, I wouldn't say overconfident, but I was feeling okay about it. I wasn't worried about doing that, whereas the other people were worried about doing it.
Did you have your velvet trousers on?
No, I didn't have my velvet trousers on. No, I did have a spell like you, Kevin, but not as dramatic as that, but I did have a spell like that. Where
rock
I had
and roll spell.
A goth. No, he
it
wasn't
was
a goth.
It was a 60s rock and roll spell where I wore some velvet bell-bottom trousers, a purple T-shirt with a decorative paint stain on it, and a yellow neckerchief. And wearing my hair quite sort of shaggy length, you know. So
sort
looking back,
greasy,
it
greasy
looked,
hair.
It looked
you
ridiculous.
Were.
That's when you came along, wasn't it?
Yeah, we
you
soon put
me.
That right, didn't we?
You changed me.
Who's the guy in the paint stained shirt?
It was silly,
oh,
really.
God,
it was just the times, wasn't it? It was just the times. But I must have been reasonably confident at that point to try and get away with it.
So, Mum, you were on a path of sort of achieving and enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And, Dad, you were on a path of not being that bothered about it, the thing itself, but you were finding some sort of confidence and identity.
Yes.
Yes.
And then you've met each other.
Well, your mum came to stay at our house in Hemel Hempstead my sister through dancing.
I went down with my partner before your dad because we wanted to
further
our dance education, which was all happening in London. So we went down there, and then when we got down there, he wanted more than dancing and I wasn't interested. So he went home and I was stuck there and I didn't want to come home because I was enjoying the dance. Mm. And my friend said, oh, my mum said you can come and live at our house till you find yourself another partner. And your dad was her brother. That was Auntie Lynn. Mm-hmm. So that's how it all happened.
I even remember my first words to
her. Yeah, I do as well.
I came in and your mum was sat there in the front room. And
do you want
a
crisp?
No. I didn't say that. I said, you're wearing my slippers. I got you to take them off and give them me back.
You said, have you got my slippers on? They say it right.
Have you got my slippers on?
Yeah.
And you did have my slippers on.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah. And I'd never met you before.
No.
And I'd come to live at your house for a little while.
But then we started talking. And I was very comfortable talking with you.
Because you're feeling confident.
And we talked forever.
And you're feeling confident, especially around...
And I was that much more confident talking to a female than I was before.
Yeah.
Just small talk, just nothing, you know, bits and bobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Just chewing the fat, but...
And then one day he took me out for a drink, which is strange, really, because neither of us drink, but no, it sounds really better, doesn't
it? It was the thing to do.
It's the thing. So we went to the pub and had two Cokes, Coca-Colas, and your dad said, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd want to ask you if I could dance with you. And I said, well, why not? So I rung Grandma and Granddad up, and my dad answered the phone, and I said, can I dance with Keith? And my dad's words were, this is Granddad, oh, bloody hell, it must be love.
Well, actually, Dad wasn't a good dancer.
Yeah. He wasn't.
I was crap, basically. I wasn't that good. I wasn't that good.
He wasn't.
But now you've ended up dancing together.
There's a big height difference between us.
Yeah.
Obviously. Dad's too tall.
You're too short.
No. And so the ballroom just didn't happen. And the Latin did. And I hadn't done Latin, really. So we were starting from zilch, really, because you were rubbish at it. And well, I hadn't done it before.
I was an enthusiastic novice.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I didn't want to let you down. I had this lovely person to dance with, top 12 in the country.
In ballroom.
And I was dancing as though I'd been tasered. And it just wasn't going to look
very
good.
Unless
I tried really hard to try and raise my game. And of course, we went practicing and we practiced an awful lot.
And you told my mum and dad that you would make me a champion.
I don't know why I said that.
Why?
Because I had to probably, I had to give myself a target that I would try and make you a champion of some kind. And probably your mum and dad wanted some assurances, really, from me that I wasn't going to just sort of play around with this thing because they'd invested so much in you.
Paid out pounds and pounds and pounds.
So I had to convince them that I was serious. And of course, we practiced so hard that we actually got better. But we got better. We went for our first competition and we did lousy in the ballroom. And we actually did really quite well in the Latin. And we thought, well, maybe it's the other route, the Latin route that we've got to go because I'm a few inches taller than you. And that's where we ended up going. So we were very focused, extremely focused. Once we decided that we would do this, and I was focused to try and make you a champion, and you wanted to obviously be better as well.
Yes.
We were, it sounds too arrogant to say unstoppable, but you'll know what I mean.
Yeah.
We were very, very conscious of where we were going and what we had to do.
But I would never have been a champion without your dad, because he was the one who was focused and he had to do it, the competitive one. I was just enjoying the Sundays going to competitions. But Dad was like, you know, oh, we've got to beat him and we've got to beat him next and then him next. And he carried me and got me into that way of thinking.
Which is extremely odd because coincidentally, you, Kev and Joe were exactly the same.
Mm.
Joe, as at kids. That time, as kids, as 9-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds.
I was the most competitive person on the planet.
Oh, Kevin.
Kevin was the most competitive person on the planet.
Very much so.
And Joe just went along for the ride, really.
Yeah.
She didn't worry about results at all. When we were talking about the results on the way home from a competition, you would be talking about who marked this and who marked that. And
you were studying all the marks.
Studying it all. And Joe was saying, don't worry, some of them judges are pretty old. They'll be dead soon.
I know. Can you remember that?
That's the difference that was between you at that time, you two.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It was the same. But it's interesting now with me and Joe, I think, like, I definitely saw that when we were kids. Now, yes. I think Joanne is more competitive now than she's ever been
absolutely.
In her life. And I think I'm less competitive now than I've ever been.
I think yeah. it's crossed over.
Yeah. I think you've both focused very much on what
always
you're
always focused. But here's the thing, and here's where we get into the juice of it. Like now I think... Of course, there'll be elements of competition here and there, but I'm almost like I hate competition. Like I've sort of analysed it, and you know the way I am, and what I've got out of that sort of competition world, and whatever. And I almost like for me, I love doing this podcast because there's nothing competitive about it. It's just I'm interested in what we're doing. I'm interested in the conversations. Interested in speaking to different people about what they do or talking about stuff that I've experienced or whatever. And I have zero interest in where the podcast sits in the podcast charts or how many people are listening. I've told the team that runs this podcast and edits it and puts it out there and whatever to not even tell me how the numbers are going, you know, in terms of who's listening to it and whatever, because I don't want to get competitive with it. Like, I need more listeners, or I need to get up the charts, or I need to achieve this with the podcast, I need to win an award. Like, I'm almost fighting to get away from that.
In a similar vein, I've lost that competitive edge, a lot of it. I wouldn't say it's gone completely.
Have you?
I think so.
Because hey, both of you, why did you want Scunthorpe to win?
Yeah, but that's different.
Well, you're part of a group.
That's just your sport, watching sport and getting behind
know.
Someone.
But when I go out and play golf, I've played golf a lot. I'm not that good at it. I'm still a 28 handicapper, but I enjoy it. And I go out with two, three, four other people. And I'm not competitive with them. I'm only competitive with myself. Because with golf, if you play a bad shot, it's your fault. It's nobody else's fault. You're not being judged on it like we were when we were dancing. You know, it's a different viewpoint. And I don't mind. For 10 seconds, I'm probably very happy that I got a better score than the others. And then I'm talking about, let's have a cup of tea. So I've lost that huge competitive edge. Maybe with age, I don't know. Mm. But maybe I'm just all competitive out.
Mm.
I've done enough. Mm. I've seen where competition takes you. The ups and downs. And I don't feel as though I need to experience those downs anymore.
Mm.
You know, and there won't be any ups, certainly, with my golf. Maybe if I break 100, I'll be happy about it. So there'll be a few ups. But I don't need the downs.
Mm. Well then, so with competitions, as we were saying before, that now, like your experience of life, your main sort of experience which has sort of shaped and informed who you are in a social group. Mm. Says you where you're comfortable is performance and competition. Like that's what you know.
I was. I don't think I am now. I'm older. I don't think I could go and perform now. No.
But because you're probably not as confident in the content and ability and you've got in comparison to what it was before.
In comparison to what it was before. And nowadays, dancing has moved on so much. I mean, you know your little devil, you and Joanne. If you see a video of us dancing, you laugh like mad. Well, and you take us off
time.
Because dancing has moved on.
And thankfully. It should move on.
And so we're never going to look like the dancers of today. So, for instance, we have kids' shows, right, at the auditorium in Grimsby. And sometimes they say, why don't you and Keith dance? Why don't you get up and dance and do something? And, well, I'm just in a state, aren't I?
You'd be a nervous wreck.
Well, we did. We did that rumba a couple of years ago.
And I held you up.
Yeah, I was shaking.
Because?
Because I knew I wasn't as good as I used to be.
And so, why does that matter?
It does. You know, because you like saying to the people, this is me, when really this isn't how I was. I was better than this.
It's probably because of being labelled and because we won quite a few things and we were labelled as champions of this, champions of that, and that's what people know about us. So in their eyes, their expectation is that we are quite good. But we know we're not that good anymore because we haven't practised.
But the people watching surely wouldn't be judging you in that context. People watching would not be going, well, let's see how good they are compared to, you know, whoever I've seen on Strictly.
But you know from your own performance, don't you?
Because you're very self-critical and self-judgmental, you know. I'm sure we could do something if we had to.
Also, our dance school, with the adults especially, we don't really dance flat out. We're dancing with social dancers and teaching beginners through to, would you say, intermediate, maybe?
We're not in that respect.
We're not doing...
We're not trying to
show
off.
No, we never show off, ever.
We never try to impose our ability over and above everybody else's. So we dance down.
Really. If we go on a cruise, for instance, and there's a dance, we might go and have a little social foxtrot or a little waltz around the floor. But we don't even put our arms up properly or anything, do we? Because we don't want to look like we're show-offs.
Yeah, so this is where it gets interesting, though, to me. Because I'm exactly the same, right? You know from things I've said to you, from things I've said on this podcast, like my fears come from, you know, what people are going to say about me. Like, so would you like to, like say in that situation, just you're at a dance, like you're on a cruise or whatever, there's some music playing, would you like to just dance for enjoyment, just the two of you, and just have a dance?
I would.
Yeah. Because I wouldn't.
Not all the dances, but I would like to dance a little bit more.
Properly.
Just to enjoy it.
To enjoy it. A couple of dances.
But you don't because you're worried about people thinking you're a show-off.
Yes.
Yeah. And we know that people do say those things.
And my theory on all of this, you know, like you've heard it, and like I say, I keep saying it on the podcast, is... One of the things that I have struggled with, and I've done, you know that I've done therapy and whatever, like, and I've said to my therapist before, like, I can't seem to get away from the ballroom competition world. I don't mean that like literally. It's like the ballroom competition world is like a microcosm of my life. It's so like I feel like from a young age, my whole self-esteem has been determined by external factors. So because it was always, you know, centered around competition. What we were talking about this, because everything in ballroom has to be centered around competition, whereas a lot of other arts, singing, acting, painting, you know, whatever, yeah. I think people do it mainly because they really enjoy doing it, whereas I don't. And I'm just saying my thing, and then I just want to get your thoughts on it. I don't really enjoy dancing, like dancing as it is. Like I don't dance because I love dancing. Like I think there's elements. The biggest element's probably similar to what you said, that it somehow gives me a confidence because I'm no good at expressing myself just in a normal social group. I can't be the centre of attention. Like
at your party. At your birthday party.
Yeah, I didn't go
week.
On the dance floor.
Neither did we. And we know. We
because
don't.
I don't want to. But that's not because I'm worried about what people are going to say about me in that situation. And I'd love to get up and dance. I'd prefer not to dance. I'm not that bothered about dancing.
But people say to us, I think some people did say to us, some friends of Stacey's said, go on, you're dancers. Mm. Go on.
Yeah.
So what were they expecting?
What were
of
they
us?
Expecting?
I mean, the best that we would show them in a sort of disco sense,
the side tap
that we were showing was a bit of dad dancing, you know.
But you could you could have got up and done something from like a little salsa or a little bit of cha 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 or something or. You know,
would think we're showing.
No, up. Exactly, and this is what I'm talking about. But the only reason you wouldn't is because you
other
didn't
people.
Of what other people in there might say
yes.
yeah. about you. Now the truth is, if you would have got up at that point and done something, the only person that would have gone, oh my God, would have been
you,
because I'd have been embarrassed because you're my mum and dad.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whereas everyone else in there, like certainly like our party. Would have all crowded round and got their phones out and started filming and got excited, and it would have been a real like treat. I'm not suggesting you should have done it. I'm just saying this is what would have happened. Mm. Everyone would have felt like, oh, look at them go! I can't believe it. They're, you know, Kev's mum and dad, and they're out here and they're having a dance, and look how good they are. And everyone would have loved it. But there's no way you would have put yourself in that situation because you would be far too concerned about what people would have thought about your dancing because you're already saying, because we used to be better than this.
Yeah.
Like you're already worried that people are, you've made up your mind that people are going to judge that you're not very good.
I didn't want them to be sorry for us or laugh behind their back.
But they wouldn't. Oldens having a go, you know.
The Oldens are having a go at
They wouldn't. There's no way they would. One, because to them who are not dancers, you're great dancers. Like period. And two, it's exciting for them because you're my mum and dad and they know that I'm on Strictly and they know that you know we're dance competitors. And three, they're all nice people. So there's no way anyone would have been like that. But you have that same thing that I have, and what I'm suggesting, my thesis on this, what I'm putting forward to you to talk about is I think this all stems from the fact that from a young age we're in a competition environment where everything, but it's different to sport. Like sport, like if you're a runner and you're first past the line, that determines whether you've won
absolutely.
Or not. Mm. Ballroom dancing is a really, really weird little corner of the dance world. It's in its own little box for me where to me, dancing is an art. Just remember everything I'm saying so you can discuss this. Dancing is an art, not a sport to me. Like dance and has been for centuries, since body language existed, basically since Homo sapiens could move. You know, like dance is an art form. It's a form of self-expression and a form of entertainment. But the ballroom dance world is very much centered around competition. It's actually not even around entertainment. Mm-hmm. it's centered around competition and winning and being better than, and it's, but because it's not a sport, you can't objectively say who the best one was. It's all subjective, so you have to have judges who are basically just saying their opinion. Now, if you know someone brings out a song, Robbie Williams is bringing out a Christmas album. You might like a couple of the songs on it, but not the rest of them. You might not even bother listening to the album because you're just not into it. I will tell you it's the greatest album that's ever been made because it's Robbie Williams. Yeah. So you can't, like on any art, you can't say that's better than that. It's all just human opinion.
Yeah.
But because we're in this position where we're getting, you know, you are first or you are last or you are sixth or whatever in this competition, all comes from someone else. But because it's our life and our drive, and you were saying you were given this goal, you'd set yourself this focus. You'd said, I'm going to make Mum this champion. And you were on this path of achieving in dance. Suddenly, our whole sense of achievement or getting towards our goal, and actually there's a definition of happiness, which is like movement towards any given goal, is basically the definition of happiness.
Right.
Our movement towards our goal is determined by other people's opinions.
Yeah.
Right, so therefore our whole sort of self-esteem, or you could say our happiness, is determined by other people. Because I remember doing competitions, and I'd wanted to win the competition, and I've come fourth, and just being devastated, absolutely devastated, and it affecting me and affecting self-esteem and confidence. But also it's our identity, our whole identity was as dancers, so I couldn't separate that from being a person. So suddenly my whole character was affected, but also I would win a competition and feel like I'm the greatest guy on earth.